Gonna talk here for about 20 minutes and then we'll take a break, maybe a little less. We'll take a break and then we'll break out into small groups. But I want to talk a little bit about the second picture. So last month was the first picture, and last month we were all in searching, remembering back to what it was like before we came into the Dhamma, searching for something, remembering what our life was like, remembering what the search was like. There's a level of discontent that we're living in when we're in that searching. And that discontent is almost like the first ennobling truth that leads us into finding a path, and that path then becomes the Dhamma. So when we get to the second picture, we are we're still in a lot of doubt as to whether or not this path is going to work. There's a part of us that begins to trust it because we see little glimpses, or in the picture, we see little footprints. And these footprints, we see them in all kinds of situations. We get these glimpses of the Dhamma. I can remember when I first, I practiced a lot by myself at home for about 10 years. Some of you know, I just found a book by Trungpa Rinpoche and I just started practicing in the closet, sitting there doing what I thought was meditation. So and I lived in Kansas City, so it was kind of barren. And when I came to Seattle, actually came home to Seattle, it was right during 9/11. Right after 9/11, there was a beginning class that Rodney was offering. And a friend of mine said she wanted to take his beginning class, and would I come and go with her, because I knew meditation and she was too scared to go. I'm like, I'm not a beginner. I mean, I'm damn near enlightened. What are you talking about? I've been practicing for 10 years. I don't need to go to a beginning class, but I promised her I would go one night just to help her out, just to help her feel okay. And we used to meet in the church at Keystone in the basement. It was upstairs when you went to the class. It was in the basement when we went to the weekly ongoing class. So I'd go in and there's a white guy sitting there. That's not my understanding. I'm thinking Trungpa Rinpoche. That's who I'm thinking. This is all Tibetan, all Asians. So there's a white guy there and it's a room full of white people. And I'm thinking, my friend is white too, so she's fitting right in. And I'm feeling like, this is not true. This is not what I'm practicing. I must be doing the real Dhamma. I don't know what this is. This is some kind of self-help thing, and I don't want to do it. So I wanted to leave. And she pleaded with me just to stay just through the night so she could, she was too scared to stay there by herself. Just, you know, it's like for those of us that came into the practice there, I mean, I sat in a closet because I wasn't sure what I was doing was on the up and up. So I could understand that she was nervous about taking this on. It was very strange. It wasn't quite as every day as it is now. Back then, you know, if you were going to learn how to meditate, you know, from a Buddhist kind of perspective, you were going out there on the edge somewhere. And so I stayed and something about Rodney's way of teaching that night, I was blown away. I was blown away. The way he talked to people, the way he answered things. I didn't understand 90% of what he was talking about, but there was something about the way he talked about it, something, some glimpse, some footprints that seemed to resonate with what I believe to be true. It's as if he knew something. But it wasn't just there. I mean, I just tried following him, just whatever he said. It turns out that I stayed with Rodney and I never stopped going. And my friend, she was like, yeah, I've had enough of that. And she stopped going. But after about 3 years, now, I've already been in the practice 10 years. And then it's 3 years in. I have this panic attack and I go to Rodney and I tell him, I think I did something wrong. You got to help me figure out what's wrong. And then he started talking about you got to get in the body. And I still did not understand. I swear this man would talk over my head all the time. And yet, I was so overwhelmed in as I sat there at his place, listening to him talk to me. I felt like I remember walking out of his house when I was finished, and I had this grin on my face, and I didn't even know why, but I felt like I knew something. I just didn't know what I knew, but I knew something. I was gonna find something. I just did not understand. And this is sort of the way this stage is. It's a time when there's, something about the Dhamma. There's something to this. But you really don't believe it. You really don't believe that what is being said in the Dhamma, what is being said by the teacher, what is being talked about in books, that the possibility of the ending of suffering, you're so into it, and yet you're not really sure that this is for me. It's this place. And the reason why I want to tell you that I was in this place is I want you to hear that I was in this place for 13 years and not to have this sense that somehow or another this is all about getting out of these places, because that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about somehow the glimpses that I was getting from Rodney's Dhamma talks and some of those talks. Some of you were there also with me in some of those early talks. You would swear there were devas flying around up above in the ceiling somewhere, because Rodney would be in a zone and you're sitting there. Not, because he, if you've ever heard a talk from Rodney, sometimes it can get a little heady, a little intellectual, and yet you're feeling it in the body. So I can just remember going at night. I would go early. I mean, I was late for everything except for going on Monday nights to that church, because if you were late, you were not going to find a place to park. And you were going to have to sit on the stairs in order to hear Rodney. You weren't even going to get into the room. It got so packed so quick. And so I would go early just to get a parking spot and then make sure I had a seat inside the room. That's what was important to me. And then I would listen. But that time was necessary for me to build a level of faith and trust in the Dhamma. It was necessary for me to feel into something, have glimpses of something, and not really see it in fruition. To see something, to know something, to believe in something, and not have a clear kind of a truth to it. This is what this stage is about. It is about this mixture of hope and doubt all mixed up together, this trusting and not trusting all at the same time. It's a We are making up what we think it is. So I would hear Rodney's Dhamma talk. I didn't go to retreats or anything like that. Excuse me. I would just listen to his talks. And I would read these books. And I would conceptualize what I thought we were talking about. And all of that conceptualization was based on my old years of self-help and my Christian understanding, what I thought of as God. I mean, all of these conditioned ways of looking at freedom. This is what I thought I was learning. So I'm learning something that is it's exciting, arousing, and yet I am putting it in my own understanding. I'm putting it in what I believe. That must be what they're talking about. It can't be this kind of open-hearted, pure liberation from suffering. Can't be that. I mean, come on. I've been living long time. I know what, you know, I know what you can do and what you can't do. I know what it's like not to have any money, and not having any money is suffering. That's it. And so there would be this way in which I would take what Rodney was saying and I would put it in my own understanding, conceptualize it so that it fit within my framing. And the problem with this, I'm kind of foreshadowing where we're going, but the problem with this putting it in my own understanding is that I'm going to have to fight against this understanding later. I need this understanding right now in this stage so that I can at least believe that this is even possible. I have to put it in a framing that makes sense to me so that I can keep going. My friend lost that framing. I had it, you know, many of us had it. And week after week after week, we would go. But sometimes you lose the framing. It doesn't make any sense. Or like, I'm going, but what's the point of this? My life isn't changing. Nothing's happening. It's just, I keep going, listening to this guy, or in this case, listening to this woman. I'm just listening to her. Sounds great. I love it. But nothing's happening. And so if we don't have a framing that begins to make sense to us, that we're like, oh, this is what we're headed towards, then we won't stay. We can easily give up the Dhamma. But the framing I was putting it in, I was taking the sky, as massive as the sky is, and I was trying to put that sky in a cup. Can you get this? I was trying to take the entirety of the sky and shove it down into a cup and expect it to fit in there. There's a way in which we need to do that. And what we end up doing is only getting a cup full of sky. That's all we get. But there's way more than what we're getting. But this is enough. It's glimpses. It's footprint that we see everywhere. This stage is important in practice. It's what I want us to talk about. Many of you may not be at this stage. You may be past the stage. You've gone further down in the pictures. But I want us to stay at this stage and think about when we first came in and how we vacillated between whether or not we believed it or not. Or you can even think about the people that you knew who were asking you, what are you going to do? What is that? Why are you doing that? What are you trying to be Buddhist? Are you Buddhist? Is that what you, my mother used to ask me regularly, have I left God? When am I coming back to God? Jesus loves me. I could come back. He would not be mad at me. He would understand. I'm like, Mama, I haven't left God. Can we give it a rest? She's like, okay, but I don't think God would like you being with Buddha. So I think you should somehow tell Buddha that you're a Christian and you got to go with God. I'm like, okay, I'll talk to God about it a little bit more. I think we worked it out. They couldn't understand what I was doing because it was so foreign to our way of being in our world. And it was even hard to talk about it. But then something would happen. I would have this moment of spaciousness, just almost out of the blue. I would feel some sense of freedom. I would just be sitting, doing nothing at work, whatever, and I would just hear little sounds in the office, just be in some spacious place. These little things would happen, and I knew this was Dhamma. I just didn't know how to, what it meant or what to do with it. And so this stage is important to get us to stay. Because what we are talking about in the long run goes against everything you know to be true. It goes against everything you can conceive to be true. It goes against all our conditioning, all our basic faith. What Buddha was doing is he walked into a world like ours, based in a savior, for lack of a better word, a savior type world where something or someone comes and saves us from the hell that we are living in. Something, a new house, a car, something is going to save us from misery or difficulty or tension or sadness or suffering or whatever you want to call it. Something is going to come and save us. We're going to find the thing that was going to save us. Even the people in Buddha's world, that's the way they believed. And Buddha was basically saying, no one's coming to save you. You don't need anything to save you. You can save yourself when you're ready. And we can't quite hear that yet in this stage. We still think something's coming to save us. And so what's coming to save us is the Dhamma. So we begin to take the little glimpses and create a little image of Dhamma that is a saving Dhamma. And this is what's going to save me. It's really okay. We need to do this. What's important in this picture to kind of recognize when you're in your groups and you're thinking about this time in your own life, your own practice, is to note that you are still looking outside of you for something to make it all better, to make it work, to figure it out, to fix you. You still need it to be fixed. And in this stage, even if some of you are in this stage right now, the sense of, I need to fix myself somehow. I'm still wanting the Dhamma to fix me, to make me and my life better. That understanding is important. But as we go through these pictures, even if you are in this stage right now, you are going to begin to open up to new stages as we go along and begin to see either the limiting aspects of this stage, or you're going to begin to be aroused like I was when I left Rodney's house. I did not know I was going to go into 3 years of anxiety, but I knew I was going somewhere. I don't know where I'm going, but I know I'm going somewhere because just the way he talked with this definitiveness, I thought, yeah, we're going somewhere. And so that energy is what kept me steady on the path, even when I went through all that anxiety. That's why this stage is so important. We need these glimpses to keep us true to the Dhamma, to keep us practicing, even if we're not sure where this practice is going, how it's going, and we're kind of making it up as we go. So be patient towards all that is unsolved in your heart. Be patient with that. All the things that aren't quite working, be patient and try to love the questions themselves. Like a locked room, little cup of sky, like books that are now written in very foreign tongue. Do not seek the answers. There's no point in it, which cannot be given to you, because you would not be able to live them. Where I am now in my understanding, if I had been told this back when I first went to see Rodney with all that anxiety, I would not have been able to hold it, because there were too many things about who I thought I was, or who I thought, what I thought I was entitled to, or what I thought was me. I had to let go of a lot of that. And I wasn't entirely prepared to let it go back then. So I couldn't live my questions, my answers back then. So the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. And that's what happened. Over time, years of being with Sims and all the time I spent, I began to live the answers that I understand now. But it was the willingness to stay in the practice, regardless of what was arising, that enabled me to do that. So that's why we're here with the footprints. And that's why we want to stay with them. So let's just sit a moment and we'll let whatever, you know, take a moment to think on when you first came into the Dhamma. When you started getting glimpses of what would be possible with this. When you started, you know, when you would leave like the end of a Dhamma talk and you're just feeling so alive and so upbeat and positive, and you don't even know necessarily why that Dhamma talk was so important to you, or some sit that you did and you felt so free in it. You can't get it back, but that one sit, you just sat down like you normally do each morning and something happened. Some poem you heard. I mean, it's all kinds of little moments in time when you didn't lose it. You just felt fine with it. You just seemed to be easy with it. You don't even know why. And see if you can have an appreciation for the glimpses of liberation, even if everything seems to be the same. Doesn't seem like, I mean, you're still struggling, still angry, still anxious, still worried, still irritable, still have difficulty, still sad, still grieving. But there's something about the Dhamma that keeps us here in practice. That's what we're going to talk about when we come back. Oh. Okay, so let's take 5 minutes, come back at 10 after. We're gonna be in the groups for 20 minutes. And so you're free to go each one share, but try not to go over 5 minutes. It's good, I think we'll do 25 minutes so that there's an extra little bit of time to kind of talk all together. So if you take like maybe 3 minutes and explain you're coming into this, what you feel about this particular picture, what you feel about just what you've heard, that's good enough. You don't have to be a master on the picture, just what you've heard. And then we'll kind of, then you can just listen and open up and hear what other people heard. And you're going to be, I think, pleasantly surprised at how close we are. All right then, so let's take 25 minutes and then I'll call you back. All right, I'll kind of give you a little time check. All righty. Good. Let's see if anybody wants to share how the share anything from your discussion. Kind of like just maybe we'll hear from people who want to share how that felt sense of being in that seeing the footprints, glimpsey kind of stages. I will fix it so you can unmute yourself. Yeah, you can unmute. Yeah, go ahead, Brooke.
Hi, thank you for your talk and nice to have you back, Tori.
Yeah.
I was noticing last month people kept pointing things out in the pictures. And so when you were talking, I was really looking at the picture tonight. And I noticed that first it says finding the footprints, not finding the hoof prints. And then I was looking at the picture and the they look like footprints, not hoof prints. They'd be way too close together in the picture to be an actual bull. And then your whole talk was about your relationship to your teacher and finding your teacher. And so to me, that's what I just was thinking about was that maybe this box is about finding our teacher, finding our path, who or what are the footprints? It's vague. Maybe it is hoof prints, but maybe it's footprints.
Yeah.
So that was kind of where I went in my thinking tonight. But it also made me think because you were saying don't get stuck in the questions. So I was feeling like I was hearing some messages about, how important is the role of the teacher, I guess. Are we
Well, it's not get stuck in the answers, trying to get the answers. You just let the questions just kind of be there. And I think a teacher, it depends. I do think a teacher is important to steer us in the right direction because I didn't realize those 10 years I was by myself, I didn't understand the conditionality, so I didn't understand that I was pretty much cramming the sky into a little cup. I didn't know that. I just had my own way. I just thought the Dhamma was part of what I already knew. And you can hear people, they say, oh yeah, the Dhamma, I know it's just wisdom, everything is just, it's all the same. It's all the same, but it's not. This wisdom is pointing to letting go of yourself, letting go of everything you know to be true. And that's a very different thing. It's not just fitting in to what we already know. And so but it takes, I think a teacher who has from their own practice begin to let go of some things, then they can help you, they can point towards letting go of some things. But the wisdom of these tales, the wisdom of this ox herding tales, is that the progress happens regardless of whether you have a teacher or not. The teachers that use these tales use them to help their yogis, their students understand where they were on the path and put some framing around the path and understand some of the pitfalls that they were going to come into. But I'm of the opinion that the Dhamma unfolds regardless of how, once you step on the path, sort of like Trungpa Rinpoche used to say, if you're new here tonight and you haven't quite committed yet, get out now while you can. because the truth is, once you step on the path, the Dhamma is going to unfold no matter how long it takes. It's going to continuously, gradually move towards its own unfolding. And we just, I just spent many, many years wandering around in the second place here. I'd say second and third, next month's picture also, because of that.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Anybody else want to share anything? Are you understanding where we're at here in this place? Can you see it as a real stage in practice? Something that we come to, right? You don't have to be there. You can maybe remember when you were there. But next week, I'm going to give a Dhamma talk on how this shows up ordinarily. So this is more about the arc of our practice in totality. That's what the first 2 weeks are going to be about. Tim and I were talking about this, and I told him, this is the way I'm going to do it. First 2 weeks is the arc of our practice. You may or may not be in this arc. Second 2 weeks is going to be how it shows up in our everyday life, you know, meditation, a sit, how it shows up in when you're on retreat, how it shows up when you're just living your life, everyday life situation. And so we can begin to see that you might not necessarily be in this stage, but in a given moment in time, you could be in it. And there's a way it unfolds like that. Yeah, Bob.
Hi, in my group, we talked a little bit about Sangha as kind of evidence of the traces for many of us that it's we sort of like, why do I keep showing up for that? Well, something's happening.
That's right.
And that brings us back, or brings me back anyway. And that's, I've been practicing a long time too, but I can't really say that I've had Sangha the way I have for the past 3 years or so. So anyway.
Yeah, that's good. And so that somehow this is moving you into a further stage along the path. I mean, this is it's practice. So we're kind of like Kathy and I were talking about this path, and it came to this understanding. I was saying that we stay in this stage. It's not just this stage. It's the next three stages until we finally give up trying to fix ourselves. That's what really is going on here. We still believe we have to fix ourselves, and gradually we lose that need to fix ourselves, and we begin to move into a different stage, and we stay there for a while. And there may be some areas in your life where you don't think you have to fix yourself, and some areas where you do, but you see this kind of changing nature of our understanding. Yeah, Suze.
In my group, we each mentioned about not really knowing what was happening, not really understanding what we were learning and experiencing. And I shared how there was a kind of excitement about that, that the kind of excitement is a little bit scary, but mostly kind of the excitement of what's next, what am I going to discover? And the other thing, there starts to be a beginning trust in one's own experience of it. Yep. Without even really being able to actually articulate that's what it was, but it was kind of like just starting to trust the gut.
Yep.
You know, I don't know what this is, but it kind of feels good.
Yep.
You know, and that's kind of a cool thing, actually. The excitement of not knowing, even though we think we should know. I mean, they're intentioned together. But anyway, so we talked some about that.
Yeah, you're pointing to something very important, because the ox, in case we forget, is coming face to face with our true nature, our Buddha nature, our true who we are truly. And so right now we are looking for something that we think is outside of ourselves to fix the nature of who we are. And then gradually we're going to begin to see that the true nature of who we are, that the ox in us, each of us, whatever that ox is out there and whoever we are here, it's all the same thing. And we gradually begin to see this. So that trusting that you're talking about is really beginning to trust ourselves, really beginning to see that our liberation comes from within us. It doesn't come from out. But right here in this stage, we are in this kind of quasi-trusting place where sometimes it feels like I can do it and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it feels like I understand and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it feels like I understand everything. I can remember times when I felt like I understood everything that was said, and yet I couldn't apply not one piece of it to my life. I didn't have any idea how I would make that happen. There's a way in which this stage is both the arousing of the awakening factors themselves of the excitement of it, and there is this reserve that begins to happen. Like you're not really quite sure if this is just a fad or is this really it? I mean, really? What is it anyway? You can't really explain it to people. It is difficult here in this stage, but you can see that it's necessary, because it is the stage that actually keeps us in the practice. All right, well, if no one else has anything, yeah, Alan. You're muted, though. Oh, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I just for the way I perceive my group, and it's kind of interesting to talk about things earlier in the practice. You kind of take yourself back, but. Yeah. Just the way the folks in my group, they're talking about something earlier in their practice, but they were bringing forth, you know, themselves now. So it was just the earnesty and then sincerity of yeah. their messages just kind of took me aback. It was yeah. just like, oh, you know, it was very yeah. special.
It is very, very special when you begin to realize how precious this time is. It's this stage in practice is so precious. It doesn't matter how long it is. It's important that, like Gotsuz is pointing to, it's important that we find ourselves some way, that we find our way in the Dhamma ourselves, and that someone doesn't, that we let go of someone else telling us what it is, and we gradually are going to begin to find our way individually. It's so beautiful. Yeah, Amber. We'll let you be the last one.
I was really struck in your talk about how you would, how at the beginning in those 10 years, you're like, what do you mean go to a beginner's class? You know, I'm basically enlightened, and how that is the whole frame that we can see. And I love the idea of putting the sky into the cup. Like, this is the sky. This is the whole thing, right?
That's right. That's what it is.
And I'm just curious if you can just speak to that anymore, just how our fixed views and our fixed identity leads us to believe that we're on a certain path, but it might not even be that we're knocking on freedom's door quite yet.
That's right. It's because we don't understand the limitations of a conditioned mind. We don't understand how limiting it is. And so everything that we take in, we have to take it in, and it has to fit within our understanding. And I think that's why this stage takes a little while, because in the next pictures, if I jump ahead, we're going to start fighting with this concept. That's part of what we have to do, is fight and struggle with trying to make this thing that we've now concretized into a cup. Now it's got to work, and it doesn't fit. And we got to start fighting with it. And so there's this whole battle that we start going through with what's true and what's not true. But anyone that's ever had a moment on retreat where you see impermanence in totality, you see it. Not just intellectually know it, you see it. What they will tell you is, it's so destabilizing, so disorienting. It is not okay. It's not like the bliss I think of. Let me just see impermanence, and that's going to be beautiful. That's the way we think of it. But if you actually have that kind of experience where you see it, yeah, it's sort of like, it's overwhelming. So I didn't see impermanence like some people see the world falling away and everything is dissolving. What I saw was division. So I kept seeing how much we divide ourselves. The teacher, I was at this retreat. The teacher said that they were going to go to some meeting because there was a big argument in the inside community with the teachers, and they were going to go have this meeting with these teachers, and they were just going to be a listener, a witness, and they were just going to listen and support everybody. And I was just sitting there, and before I knew it, it felt like it's not going to make any sense if I try to describe it, but it felt like the world was dividing itself and just kept dividing. And every time it would divide, another divide. It was very upsetting. So this, even though we all want to see impermanence, if we were to see it right now and we're not prepared for it, it would destabilize it. So instead, this path has to be gradual, so that when we actually are able to see more fully the sky, then we have the capacity to be with that which we see. So we don't want to rush it. We don't want to hurry up and let me just see that, because it's too destabilizing. Instead, we want to enjoy the excitement and the kind of arousal that we have just seeing the little glimpses and just seeing this willingness to stay on the path. It's just, I wouldn't give up those times of sitting with Sims in those early days for anything. If I get to the end and they say, okay, you can't get in until you go all the way back at the beginning, start all over again, I'll be like, okay, that's good. I can go start all over again. And I would be back there in those days of sitting in Keystone, listening to Rodney. They were And what I want you to hear is that when I was there listening to Rodney, my life was a mess. That's what I'm trying to get you to hear. It's not like my life was representative of what was actually happening with Rodney. No. And I was going to have to go into more mess to get away from all that childhood conditioning. It's going to take a little while before I let go of all that childhood conditioning. But eventually, I let go of it all. So it does have its fruits at the end, but it just takes a little while. And if you're in a rush to fix yourself, then that's when you're stuffing the sky into the cup. But if you just let it unfold and you just trust the path, even with the parts we don't know, then it gradually unfolds on its own. You don't have to do anything about it. It will do it on its own. I think that's what the point was of the ox herding story, was to help these yogis that would come into the Zen practice. And they needed to know, what's the end game here? Where are we going? And this is, the stories are a way of helping people see how the practice unfolds. You can see where you are on the spectrum. You could see that you are in and out of all of these stories throughout your everyday life, any given moment in time. So thank you so much, you guys. Next week, we are going to talk about how this shows up, regardless of where we are in the picture frame, how it shows up still in a random sit or a random retreat or a random moment in time. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then we'll have, so at the end of the month, I'm hoping that you guys will begin to, well, let me just give you this. What I think the best way to practice with these pictures are, is on the website, we have those pictures, the picture and the verse. And before you go to bed, look at the picture, nothing, just look at the picture and read the verse. Look at the picture and read the verse. That's it. And then let the Dhamma help you see it unfold over the course of the month. But you look at the picture, you read the verse. Look at the picture, read the verse at night before you go to bed. Or first thing when you get up in the morning, whenever, just once a day, look at that picture and read the verse. And then the Dhamma's own wisdom will help you begin to see it. Do you have the link to the picture? It's just on... I don't know if you have access to it, Cheryl, if you can put it up, but if that's a little bit, you can just go to the website.
Go to the website and you go to classes and programs and annual teaching program. That's where it's at in the...
So the annual teaching program. And then just and they're all there, but try not to read ahead. It's no point in it. Just look at the one we're in. And then at the end of the month... Oh, thanks, Ava. At the end of the month, we're going to hopefully you'll think about some ways that I like artistic expressions like poetry or a little writing or some reflection or something, even like reflecting on the picture, what comes up for you. And then at the end of the month, that's what that last Monday is going to be, where we're going to share what comes up for us in relation to these pictures. And so that's how we'll kind of connect with it and begin to see how people's expressions are.